Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Surviving the Shift. I'm
Welcome
your host, Michelle.
Surviving the Shift, a show where spirituality meets practicality, with your host, Michelle Arbeau.
Welcome to Surviving the Shift. I'm your host, Michelle Arbeau. We had a little bit of technical difficulties there with the intro, but it actually played this time, which is great. So joining us tonight, we have special guest Debbie Nigro. Now, Debbie is such a fabulous lady. She's such a super successful businesswoman. She's a comedian, radio personality, and the list goes on and on. Trust me, this lady is a go-getter. Debbie is a founding partner of the FirstWivesWorld.com and is a consultant to the producers of the upcoming Broadway musical, The First Wives Club. She's also the owner of StowAbabe.com, which is a site geared towards the 40-plus woman. Debbie, in my opinion, is a shining example of someone who is creating her own reality and living out her dreams. So without further ado, we're going to bring on Debbie.
Hi.
Hi, Debbie. Welcome to
Michelle.
The show.
Michelle, you're so sweet to have me. I thank you very, very much. And I really loved the opening line of your show, which said, spirituality is practicality.
Yes. That was done by a fabulous man named Marcus from Marcus Unlimited, and he does exquisite music, exquisite voiceovers. Marcus, thank you so much for that intro.
Thank you,
so
Mark.
Debbie.
Yes.
So welcome, Debbie. I'm so excited to have you on the show because I really resonate with your work and I really resonate with your style. So I would really love to, I know you're successful on the outside, you know, I have a lot of things going on, but what we'd like to talk about on the show is the behind-the-scenes stuff. Who's the real Debbie and what's been going on behind the scenes with all this success that you've been having?
It's funny you should bring this up, and it's, I don't think there's any coincidences in life, Michelle, about why people come into your life or ask you to do things at certain times. And in that respect, I have great appreciation for paying attention to the signs that something is happening for a reason. So the fact that you just asked me that is interesting, because all through the last, quite a few months of my life, I've said out loud, wow, there's always the story, and then there's the real story. And I refer now to a time which is going on as we speak in my life, where my poor mom was unfortunately diagnosed with a very aggressive and horrible cancer that has had us in the hospital and nursing homes for the last 4.5 months straight. And we just got back last night for the first time to home. And coincidentally, my mom, and here's an example of something that happens where you don't know why until later on. My mom has always had a house. We grew up in a great house. My father died very young at 55 years old, like 27 years ago. I lost a younger brother about 5 years ago. He was 40, and he had purchased the house from my mother to raise his children there. His children still live there with my sister-in-law, and she's now wonderfully remarried. So my mother went to move to an apartment for the first time in her life about 12 years ago. And there was something really nice about having her own little space, so she was kind of glad about that, having run a big house. And then just this past September, not quite a year, she, by the some strange set of circumstances, had to move. And at a certain stage of life, people don't take kindly to having to disrupt their lives. And moving, you know, is top stressor up there with, like, divorce and death and,
yes,
and all those great things. So she had to move. And it was all within, like, a month. And I was freaking out because I'm a single mom, and I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do here? And I had to find her, help her find a place. And sure enough, right where I live, and I live in a beautiful complex by water. I love water. And there was, for the oddest reason, there's never a place available here because everybody so loves this place. In the 1 hour I asked downstairs, there's a front desk and people hang out, and it's really sweet. And I said, you know, if anybody who's renting or selling their apartment, and the lady standing next to me, who I'd only seen in the elevator, you know, passing, hello, love you, how are you, said, funny, I'm on my way to the real estate right this second because we have to leave immediately because my husband got transferred to a fellowship in California, and I'm putting my apartment up for, I said, wait a minute, the apartment right on my floor? And she said, yes, well, let's go take a look. So now there's a big decision at a certain age of life. Do you want your mother living on your floor? Okay? There
yeah.
goes my love life. It's nice. There's my mother, and there goes my love life. One breath. So I said to her, I even joked with her, I said, Ma, listen, here's the story. You're going to move in here because it's gorgeous and fabulous, and I know you'll be the happiest woman ever on the planet. You'll see beautiful views. You'll have me down the hall. Your granddaughter will be here. The other thing is you have to know, if you see me in the elevator with somebody you don't know, pretend you don't know me. So we had a huge laugh about that. But come to, you know, so the first 4 months, I would actually run back and forth laughing because we had a lot of fun. I'd take her out for a glass of wine. Or I'd, you know, it was great to have the commute to visit my mother be on my floor. And then all of a sudden, she'd only been here about 4 months. She got this terrible cancer. And as I, in the last 24 hours, have had to care for her at home, which is down the hall, I've been running back and forth saying, what are the chances that God made my life so simple to do this right now? Because I have wireless internet here. She doesn't have it there. I have to keep running back and forth to try and do some business, which has been nearly impossible. And yeah, I think that's just an example of why things happen. You don't know why at the time, but here it unfolds.
Yes, it's a beautiful example. I mean, you couldn't have asked for it to flow the way it did, minus the cancer, of course, but,
yes,
but definitely.
It's funny because, in the beginning when I was running back and forth, I actually said out loud, wow, thank God I don't have to worry about her. Boom. And so
yes.
Here we are. So, I mean, I don't want to belabor the negative part that's been going on, which has been horrid. But behind the scenes, that is a prime example of something going on in my life, but having to work around that to function. And what I've caught on is that so many people, you know, you don't really feel the pain of a dark experience unless you're having it.
Yes.
So when people say, how are you doing in passing all the time, and hey, how are you, and people say fine and walk on, usually the fine really isn't it. If you let your guard down and respond and say, you know, life really has been horrific, I've been living in the hospital, et cetera, I would say in the last 3-4 months, one out of two people has said back to me, I know I've been there, which I found startling.
Yeah.
And what I also found startling is how much more sensitive I was to that comment, having now experienced the pain of something. Okay, so I guess one of the things I've learned in sensitivity and just in my own soulfulness is when I think back of how many people who have said things have gone wrong in their lives, and yeah, you feel bad, but you don't really feel bad.
Exactly. And, yeah, you just don't get it. Yeah.
Yeah, and when you take a little more time with people to give them a little more real attention on their answer when it's not a good one, and you see the reaction, you're really actually doing something really great for the other person right there without doing anything that costs you anything.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So that's
the
point.
Yes.
So to that point, behind the scenes, I have been trying to work. And, you know, I point out the reason you and I met is because we have the same sense of humor, correct?
Yes, we do.
Okay, we do. And I have this personal project that I launched online because I think the way of the world is if you can create something through the internet, you can really grow very quickly an idea or a business and connect with people like no other time in the world.
Yes.
So somehow you're in Canada, is that correct?
I am, yes. I'm in New Brunswick.
You're in Canada, and I'm in New York, and in 2 seconds, we connected on a sense of humor, a really unique sense of humor, which is an appreciation for having some fun with making some fun of what's going on in a stage of life. So
yes.
Keeping a sense of humor and writing humor and trying to be a businesswoman and keep something flowing that I've committed to with all this crashing down behind me was maybe the hardest thing I've had to do in my whole life, writing humor bedside at my mother's bed at the hospital with cancer. I mean, it doesn't get any more bizarre, right?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah, that's quite, you know, amazing to me that, you know, I
right.
was going to ask you that, actually. I was going to say, you know, how Debbie, do you keep going with all of this, you know, behind the scenes, and yet you're still going about your daily business? It was just, you know, baffling to me. But now that you've explained it to me, and, you know, I get it.
It was terrorizing to try and keep going, because really, you almost can't. When your heart is broken and you're somebody really close to you is not doing great and you're in that loop really close to it, your own life evaporates. You no longer have any, you can barely keep up with your own existence, bills, people, friendships, work. And I wonder, I'm a strong girl, and I am, you know, the sense of humor has got me through. I wonder how people have been doing it all along, and how do they, and what they lose in the process. And you know, I've lost a lot of money, I've lost a lot of time, I've lost a lot of communication, I've lost a lot of opportunity, I've lost a lot of me. But then every time I would be frustrated and freak out and how am I going to get this done, I would say, you know what, it's not about me right now. And
yeah,
that always set me straight. Sometimes it's just not about you, no matter how difficult life is. So back to the humor and how we know each other and love each other, because we connected on this humor. You're a talented, talented girl. And happy to have you amongst my crew of babes. We call it, it's called stillababe.com. And,
I created a
little world for women over 40 feeling 20, sexy till you're dead. No expiration date on sexy. We're going to celebrate our imperfections instead of beating ourselves up. And since someday has actually arrived, it's time to, you know, put a fire under there and let's roll on anything that's kept you, that you've had in your mind that you've always wanted to do someday. Because there is no more time. It's now. And you got to roll. So that is really my passion, is to encourage other, and I say women, and I love men. Everybody knows I love men. And it's, the message is right for men, too. But women tend to, because physically, they have so many more body parts falling apart.
Yes, I agree.
They have so much more that's, you know, expected of them to keep the look up, to keep things going in terms of their looks in society, that they really have a much harder time coping with all of this and trying to keep it together on so many fronts. So I just want them to...
Exactly, yeah. Can you imagine if we went bald?
You know,
it would
probably be easier.
Women? Yes.
You know, if I was bald, I'd be president.
You would be.
I would have so much free time. I mean,
yeah.
I'd either be president of this country or start a new small country of my own, because what would you do with all that free time that you spend on a woman taking care of herself? It's insane.
I know.
It's insane. So, yeah, I want women to stop beating themselves up for all their flaws, because there are plenty. And unless you're totally blind, which fortunately we are going blind, we can't see anything anymore, which is very helpful. Unless you're completely blind, then you know this is not fun, but we got to make it fun so that we can enjoy this phase of our life and be grateful we're here to enjoy it, right?
Yes. So what about the First Wives Club? Now, I know that this, you know, this is something that's, I guess, based on your own life, and you've been through divorce. And so how did this come about, the First Wives Club? Is this something that you've been with from the get-go, or is this something you jumped aboard with?
Five years. I've got a project going for 5 years before this one. I'll tell you how it worked out, because I love to, you want to get the sordid details, right? Not the stuff
yes.
Everybody else knows? Okay, good.
Exactly.
my ex, he wasn't my husband, but my ex, I used to call him my perpetual fiancé. Okay, my ex that I lived with for 12 years after I was divorced from my husband of 3 years, when I split with him and hit the ejector button, which, you know, you have a choice there. Sometimes it's the women who hit the ejector button. Came back around in life after that to introduce me to my now partner, who had, along with his partner, just gotten the rights to the movie, The First Wives Club, to bring to Broadway as a musical. Have you followed that bouncing ball so far?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. So it was the ex who I wanted to kill, and I have nothing to do with him anymore, who was my business partner for a while. You know how sometimes relationships just go where they go.
Yes.
Came back around, because what he was always brilliant at that I could never deny was who he would introduce me to, that he would meet along the way. And he had an uncanny ability to find very intriguing people and then match me up, because there were often many places where my talents and the other person's talents were a perfect match. And this was a prime example. So his parting gesture was to introduce me to my partner, Paul Lambert, who's the lead producer of the Broadway musical that's coming to Broadway called The First Wives Club. And then the other producer along with him is a guy named Jonas Nielsen. And I have a third partner named Ron Lotion. And while these guys had gotten the rights to the musical, that was just an idea at the time, I had really been very well versed into the world of niche, you know, women's experiences. And I spent a lot of years, about 10, really speaking to the working moms, because I was one. And I had a whole franchise called The Working Mom on the Run, or What the Heck Happened to My Life. And I really felt that, what the heck happened in my life. So it was radio and television and home shopping network and a bunch of stuff. Then the next thing I was looking at was, I was studying trends. I like to see where things are going. I'm an information nut. And I saw that this demographic of women 40 plus was the next big thing coming that nobody was catching on to, because as we sit here today, women 40 to 60 are the largest segment of the population with the most money. Do you know that?
I didn't, but it's an interesting fact for sure.
Yeah.
I would have guessed that maybe if you had asked me, but I never knew that, no.
Yes, and they have all the money right now. So you want, everybody listening wants to be nice to all the women over 40 if they want their money. Okay, that's how it goes. And what was happening, too, was there was a baby boomer curve. And so I knew this 5 years ago, so now we got about another 10, maybe 15 years where these women, of which I am one, are the largest segment of the population. We actually rule the world, and we don't know, you see?
Oh.
That's a little secret.
Yes.
We rule. Well, we haven't had a long conversation with each other about this. We didn't get together to figure it out that we rule. So that's a really big theme right now that I'm very passionate about. And what's really exciting to me is in my most recent reading about demographic trends, the advertisers of the world are just starting to get that, hey, maybe we shouldn't just advertise to MTV, that maybe, let me think, just maybe people are older and they have money and they want to be talked to respectfully. So where women in particular and older people in general have lost value in our society as they age, as opposed to other societies where they're revered, it's all of a sudden changing, and there's new respect being pointed at this direction. And you're going to see something this year, I think, very loud, where all of a sudden, like it was a new idea, old people are in. Okay, Michelle?
Oh, well, that sounds good to me. I'm getting older.
And so you may want to borrow my line that I use all the time. I having just had a birthday, and people saying, how old are you? I say, well, listen, I'm ageless. That's number one. But I tell everybody I'm getting younger and better looking every day. I cannot wait for tomorrow.
That's awesome. I love that. So really, I mean, the work that you've done, the projects that you've been involved with, it's all, I see a theme with everything. And it's really, you know, you're helping people on a spiritual level, but in a fun way. It's
exactly.
Really, I guess it's
exactly.
Unique. Yeah. For sure.
No one's ever put it that way. You know, say
that
again. It's really very special what you just said, because I'm very passionate about anything I work on and work with. And my innate ability and gift is to bring out the best in other people. And
yes.
I just never heard it phrased the way you said it just now. So, yes, my work is spiritual.
Yes, it is. And, I mean, you are, and like I say, you know, I told you this before, I'm a numerologist, so I like to analyze things with numbers, and you are a seven, and the seven life path is all about the seeker of truth, and they're always looking for the deeper meaning in life. They're always looking for, you know, the whys and the hows of life. They're always seeking for that spiritual side. And as much as they're doers, and you're definitely a doer, I mean, you do fit that profile, as seven is the most active number on the physical plane, but it's also the deepest, most spiritual. Coincidentally, a lot of churches are at seven addresses just because it's such a deep, wise, it's like the wise sage.
Really?
So I guess, and yes, and in your work, you are the wise sage, but you do it in a way that's, I guess from a physical perspective, it's like marrying the two together.
You reminds me of, it's like when something you don't realize, it's like flavored Tylenol. Like, you know it's good for you, but they veil it with like a cherry flavor, so you don't really think you're taking Tylenol. So maybe that's kind of like how I would describe me. You don't know
there
you're
you
taking
go.
Medication.
There you go. Exactly.
What I wanted to say about the First Wives thing, because I didn't want to leave this out, was very important. The piece that ended up being something that I was able to contribute is now called firstwivesworld.com. And what it is the online, real home-based, real First Wives Club for the 30 million or so divorced women in this country, the U.S., who are either contemplating or moving on or navigating through divorce. And quite frankly, it's something that never existed when I was going through it. And so it has been really rewarding to have the women thank me and saying, oh, wow, this has been great. Because, and again, we love men. And my joke is now just on the weekends. That's my joke. We love men just on the weekends. But what happens typically in divorce is that women historically have had the child-rearing responsibility. And a woman's job, once you get divorced and you're a single mother raising kids, you really have, like, 9 jobs, and it's really difficult. And it's and really, it's important to get really solid information on how to navigate this life from a source you can trust. And so we've compiled years and years of really great knowledge so that women can make wise choices for themselves and their families going forward. And we don't hate men, really. We love men. It's just that women have a different life path, experience, perspective, and they need different information to carry through. Because once you're divorced with kids, you're divorced forever.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, with this First Wives world, I mean, it's really almost like therapy. It's like an oasis or a sanctuary that people can go to, you know, recently divorced women, and, you know, find themselves again or find people that are within their support community and really, and like I say, again, it's spiritual in the practical, which is so fitting for this show because that's what I'm all about, too. It's about, you know, you can reach that spiritual aspect, but you don't have to meditate atop a mountain top all day to reach enlightenment or whatever you want to call it. You know,
I think enlightenment comes. Yeah, I think enlightenment comes often from other people who are experiencing the same thing as you.
Yeah.
And, you know, people gravitate toward like-minded or like-thinking or like-feeling people. Okay, you and I are even here on the show because you are somehow on my website because you are somehow like me in that you have a perspective on life that is humorous and you appreciate that. So that's why we're connected. People seek out understanding through others who are like them and they can relate to. And so the divorced world and people who are divorced, it's so challenging because it's a lonely sport. And usually if you're divorced, you're the only one in your friends, only one in your family, or, you know, people can only console you so much without having gone through it to know and understand. So part of First Wives World has a super secret second door, which is the, not so secret, but it's a social network that's member only, where the women who are going through it or thinking about it really talk privately amongst themselves and can share, you know, real honest stuff with each other and help each other out. So that's really important.
Yes. And I like what you said about, you know, enlightenment comes from, you know, meeting those like-minded people or those people that resonate with you. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do with the show. And this is kind of the basis of what I'm doing here is bringing on people like you, Debbie, that will share their story. Because I've found, you know, through the workshops I've done, through the lectures, the, any kind of speaking that I've done, people want to know your story or what you've gone through because they find so much comfort in knowing that we went through the same thing or that we're going through the same thing. They just, you know, that's where they find the most healing. It isn't from what I've taught at the workshop so much as it is after the fact and talking with people and, you know, just sharing.
Yeah, and being real. You know, when you let your guard down, other people let their guard down, and then you can really have a good conversation. You know, if
exactly.
I mean, everybody will, you look at me, you don't know me well, you see my credentials, you see my biography, you figure I got it all together, right?
Yes.
You don't know about the times when I was broke or the times when I was bankrupt or the times where, you know, I was having, you know, great bouts of depression because how the heck could a smart girl like me get herself in a place like this? Blah, 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 blah. Okay, I mean, or dealing with,
yes.
And I've had some real challenges. I mean, anybody who's got somebody who's chemically imbalanced in their family, I need not say any more. Dealing with somebody, trying to help somebody whose challenges involve, you know, bipolar disorder and other issues. I mean, I have lived that. I lost my younger brother to bipolar disorder. It was a very tragic ending. You know, he was one of my best friends. He's left nieces, I have nieces and nephews with no father. You know, you try and take the place. There's so many things that go on behind the scenes of people showing up the way other people think that they are, you know, got it all together. So I just wanted to say that I think the more challenges that you overcome that are thrown at you, of course, you build scar tissue, which is the downside, and you become, you know, less emotional when, you know, you sort of build a wall to deal going forward. But every time you survive something really insane and get through it and are, you know, still there, you build more character and more character and more character. And people are drawn to people with great character, I think, because the sheer number of experiences, both good and bad, build texture and are really the human experience. And those who are able to articulate it honestly, I think draw others to them and then in some unique way are enlightened and sort of helped to go forward in their own lives by saying, oh, they got through it, I can too.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we're here. I mean, Yes, exactly. I mean, well, that's why we're here, to learn and learn through personal experience. And that's why we're in the physical bodies that we're in. So definitely the people who have gone through, and I find that's, it seems to be almost like a rite of passage. Those people who are meant to go on to help other people on a spiritual level, they tend to have a lot of hardships early on that, you know, they learn the hard way, or they learn through, you know, those terrible experiences that in hindsight were meant to show you something very important. And I have to mention too, Debbie, that you are a seven, and sevens tend to learn through hindsight, or they learn through sacrifice and loss. So a lot of sevens will look back at their life and say, wow, you know, I had a lot of hardships, a lot of, it's almost like life has dealt you a bum deal, but really
it's like a
blessing in disguise, because when you get to the, you know, older or more mature stages of your life, you're this, you know, you've got this wealth of knowledge and experience to draw upon to share with others, and you become this beacon of light. It's almost like people are drawn to you because they know how much you know, or how much knowledge and experience that you have. It's beautiful.
Thank you. You know, you're making me think I should get myself a chair over at the local amusement park and charge for my advice.
That's your next venture.
I think I'm going to do that. I'm gonna, you know, when you walk up and you buy a ticket and sit down for a few minutes, take a picture, like you know, a summertime Santa Claus, only with wisdom. I like it.
There you go. Get one of those psychic turban things that the psychics wear.
I'm seeing it with a light shining on me. I you know, you never know what's coming next.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Debbie? I have no commercial break, so we're going to keep talking. I know it's, you know, people are probably getting sick of us rattling, you know, our mouths off, but this is only my second show, so I haven't really scored any sponsors yet or any ads, so I'm still searching.
Takes a long time, though.
So.
It's okay.
Yeah, so
you
we're
just
gonna
keep going,
and yeah. So we'll take some callers. I'm going to let everybody know that maybe we'll have a couple of callers come on and pick Debbie's brain a little bit, but I don't have any in the queue yet, so somebody call
please.
I'll
tell you what I can talk to. I'll tell you
okay.
What I'm really great at. You know, we're in a time where we're in a recession, and people are struggling to figure out what they should be doing. Sometimes next acts, old acts, people are out of work. People are looking to reinvent themselves. People are looking for, what's possible. I'm really good at brainstorming with people a new business idea, okay? I really have spent a lot of my life being a unique business advisor, a very out-of-the-box thinker. My ideas are pretty refreshing. I can listen to anybody. I do this actually for people who are in taxi cabs, people on the train, people, anybody who tells me what they're thinking of doing. I just sort of hash it out with them, and they usually leave me going, wow, I never thought of that. So whether it's a new business idea or a marketing idea for your business, or a anything that revolves around how you're going to get forward past some stuck place, getting unstuck, I'm pretty good at that. Humor is really something that I really would love to know how many people use humor to get through their nonsense or bad times, and how therapeutic that is. I can speak to really entrepreneurship. I can speak to how to keep yourself going when things look like you can't go any further. I mean, you know, I'm actually writing a book sort of about how many times can you get back up. You know, how much further can you dig before you give up? And so I have a lot to say of encouragement and wisdom and inspiration to anybody who could use a little dose of that. That's really my gift.
Excellent. Well, I'll definitely have to hire you, Debbie, for my own business.
While you're waiting for someone to call, which, you know, they may or may not, I spent years, I'll tell you a little background on me, what you may not know. I was a nationally syndicated radio talk personality.
Yes.
And I started with one little radio station with an idea and like $200 in my pocket and smoke coming out of my car back in the mid-90s. And I built a show called The Working Mom on the Run, or What the Heck Happened in My Life. And I got an hour of airtime. And I even had to buy my own. At the time, we were using reels, big reels of tape. There was no digital. And this idea started with just passion idea. And I built it to over, 120 stations live on the weekend, 3 hours live. I bought satellite time. You know, some people go buy eggs. I was buying satellite time. I had no idea what I was doing. Okay, I was like, whoa. And then I ended up, writing and producing short features up to 500 stations. I mean, I just kept going and going with radio. But talk radio, what I will tell you, even on sometimes hundreds of stations, when I would be talking and, you know, fishing for callers, often I would not get calls, and I would be freaking out, like, why is nobody calling me? Why is nobody listening to me? In fact, I did win the best radio syndicated talk show in the country 3 years in a row from the American Women in Radio and Television. And so it's not so much about who's not calling, because very few people actually pick up the phone to call a radio show. Do you know that?
Well, I'm starting to learn that.
Yeah.
But I do think that they may be a little bit afraid of just your success and, you know, your level of, I guess, celebrity.
No.
I do have a caller, actually.
Oh, good. See, people aren't really afraid. They're just afraid to make a call. Even if they're curious, they don't know me from a hole in the wall. If I say something that they think they can benefit from, even if they wanted to make the call, sometimes they don't pick up to make the call because, you know, it's hard to do that because they'll listen for somebody else. So let's say hi to whoever you do have.
Okay, great. All right. Hello. Who am I
Hello.
Speaking
with? Hi. Hi, Who's Michelle.
This? Hi.
It's Laverne.
Oh, hi, Laverne. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Do you have a question for Debbie?
Well, I have a comment first. Debbie, thank you for representing all of us 40 women plus so well.
Yeah, Laverne, go girl.
You're doing it with such style and humor, and I love that.
Thank you.
I did want to share with you, you are so right about women and how we have allowed ourselves to bullied perhaps into thinking that we have to look a certain way when we're in our mid-40s, and we are not in our 20s any longer, and I don't ever want to go back to that time because I am such a more interesting person now with life experience than I was in my 20s.
Oh, yes, you have much more texture now. You're a mosaic of excitement.
And far more, I think, self-confidence that I did when I was in my 20s. But when I was in my 20s, I was a television reporter, and I remember being called into a meeting with my producers, and they told me, you don't look right, you have too much weight on, your makeup isn't right, your hair isn't right, and we don't like your clothing. And my response to them was, you never said anything about my journalism practices and the stories that I'm breaking every night on your television station. And they couldn't comment on that because they knew I was doing a good job.
Hey, Laverne,
but yet,
when I was,
none of the men,
young,
yeah, and none of the men were called in and told, your hair isn't right, your clothes not right, your makeup isn't right, and those men were wearing makeup too.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I let those people in that meeting shatter my self-confidence. If I was able to go back in time, I would tell them, you don't have it right. It's not your look. It's the message that you're sending to the world.
Yeah,
so,
and you know, we've come a long way since then. Back when I was in my 20s, too, I was an aspiring TV reporter. I thought I wanted to be that. And my problem was, and it kept coming back, I was too ethnic at the time. Can you imagine? I'm Italian, and Italians were not in during those days. It was really amazing. Every time I turned around, it was and again, I love blonde. I am one now. But and at least today, let me look in the mirror. Yep, I'm a blonde. I was too ethnic. And, you know, we've come a long way. I have a daughter who's in her 20s. She's 22 years old, and she's blonde. Wow, she's cute. But I don't even think she realizes how much has changed in the last 20 years for women based on our generation of women sort of just, you know, trailblazing and flashing through and moving forward to make it possible that none of that really mattered that much anymore and that women were perceived for value and talent, even though there's still some backlash. It still goes on. Let's get real, but it does. But it's not hardly as much as it was back then. Right, Laverne?
That's really, really quite true.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, Laverne, you say we don't want to be 20 again, and for the most part, about 99% of the time I don't want to be. But there are occasions where I watch my daughter go on a couple of different dates in the same day, and I think, boy, I could do that again.
I would like to I would like to have the amount of stamina I had in my mid-20s, because by 10 o'clock, it's lights out. When I was in my 20s, at 10 o'clock, I was just getting started.
I know. These kids, they go out at 11. I can't stay up either. It's horrible. But you know what? I don't really want to stay up that late because I like the mornings better. And besides, you know, where are we going after 10 o'clock? Could you please tell me? Where are we going?
I'm going to bed.
I'm going to bed. You know, a couple of times I tried to stay out, Michelle. You know, if you're ever out with a bunch of people and you happen to be in a place that turns from a restaurant into like a nice spot and you stay there too long, you know you're too long when everybody sitting around you looks like they're in grammar school. Then you know you have to go home. You look around and go, am I father time here? What is going on? How did this happen to me? And it's sort of like this age curve as the clock ticks. And so you know what? You just stay till you still blend, and when you don't blend, you go.
I'm going to let other callers have an opportunity to speak with you, but thank you, Debbie, for what you're doing, and thank you, Michelle. I love your show.
Oh, thank you, Laverne. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, Laverne.
Okay, bye-bye.
Go to stillababe.com. Join us over there for a few laughs. Okay. Hey, she was cute, huh, Michelle?
Oh, she was. Yeah, she's a doll, for sure.
She's a doll.
Yeah.
She's a doll.
Yeah. Laverne's a good friend of mine. She saved the day. She called in.
That's what I used to do. Listen, this is how it works. When you first start a show, you have to get people you know to call in so that people don't think you have nobody calling. It's really everybody does it, so you're okay.
Well, I'm learning as I go, I guess. But, yeah. So we'll just keep... Go ahead,
honey. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
We're just talking over each other. Oh, that's okay. We'll just keep on keeping on, I guess. And if no one calls in, that's fine. We'll just keep chatting away. We're having a great time here.
Let's talk about spirituality, and let's talk about your numerology, because I'm just a layperson amazed at what you do, okay? And you got me all excited about being a seven, because I am happy that I'm up there with this wise sage thing going on. But when I did the little, you went to my site, stillababe.com, okay? And how did you join that, by the way? Who brought you into that?
I think I saw that somewhere on another site, and I totally resonated with it. I just thought, I have to be a part of this, because it, even though, you know, I'm not 40 yet, you know, I'm 40, you know, inside I feel like I'm in the 40-plus group, but, you know, my technical age is 32, so I'm not there, but I'm there. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
So
and
I definitely,
you
know, oh, thank
you.
And I felt like I had to join, because I thought, this is the group for me, because I really don't resonate with my peer group. It's not, they don't really meet me on the same page. They're not, and I think it comes from, you know, having a harder life early on that you need, I guess when you reach a certain age, it's like, you feel like you're 90 in a 32-year-old body, right?
Thank God the body doesn't act like 90, though.
Well, exactly.
It's good to be 90 in your head and not in your backside. I can tell you that much.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
You win.
Yes. Well, for the time being, I win, but things are starting to go downhill. So, you know, when you hit around, you know, when you hit around 30, things start to go downward. And two kids later, right? I mean, kids.
No, you haven't peaked yet, honey. Listen. You missed the news in my Still a Babe newsletter last week, which said QVC actually did a report. A survey to about 2,000 people, men and women, to ask them questions about when they thought a woman, I guess, was most beautiful, what age. And the collective answer was women peak at 31, which, of course, I disputed because I didn't think I peaked yet at all, and I'm, you know, over 50. I said, these guys got the wrong memo. But fact is the world has put a number on peaking beauty in women, and you haven't even reached it yet. So you don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, I'm 32, so I'm just over the peak then, am I not?
Oh, you're over the peak. Okay, you're over the peak.
Yeah.
You peaked. You're just a little bit over the peak. I hope you didn't miss it. You didn't miss it, because the example is, though, that you really haven't peaked until you're dead, honey, until you're dead.
Yeah.
There was a story out yesterday about the brain not peaking, really not peaking, until your late 60s, and that's the prime time. Yeah, your brain doesn't peak until you're in your late 60s. I thought that was helpful to know.
That's promising.
Yes.
Yeah,
will I be able to find my keys by then? That's the question.
Oh, yeah, my memory's going now, so I don't know about 60. So what did you want to know about the numerology aspects?
Well, I took you put a little sort of a numerology test on my site to see what number you were. I thought that was, if anybody hasn't done it, Michelle laid it out on stillababe.com. She had a whole thing on numerology and how to figure out what number you would be in, and then there was a description of what that number meant. So I was very fascinated after I answered the questions and came out to be a seven, and then read what seven represented, which was my life path, had all the trouble in the past, but that all meant something going forward. I'm a seeker of knowledge, but I'm a doer. I mean, everything it said, I was like, wow, that was really intense. How do you come to knowing all this? What's your background? How's that sound?
Well, you know, it's a long story, but, you know, right around, I don't know, early 20s, I started to really embrace my spirituality and really get into it, because I'd had a lot of psychic experiences when I was a child, and I really blocked those out, and I didn't want to go there with that. I didn't have the right, I guess, you know, family life to be able to embrace that. No one encouraged it, so I just blocked it out. But in my early 20s, I started to, I guess those things heightened again, and I had to really go within and figure out what was going on. And during that time, I started to dream in numbers every night, and it was the most bizarre thing.
Really?
I would dream. Yeah, it was really incredible. Every single night I would dream of numbers, and they would be very long number sequences, and they would be very, very clear, very vivid. And I had no idea what was going on or why I was dreaming in these numbers and what they meant. So I started to do a little research, which, you know, I share your love of research and, you know, striving to get the knowledge and finding out the whys of things. And so I stumbled upon a book called The Angel Numbers Book by Doreen Virtue, and that was really the first book I picked up. And
Angel
I looked
Numbers
in,
Book?
It's called The Angel Numbers Book by Doreen
okay.
Virtue, and it's just a little simple book, and it tells you what the numbers mean from 0 to 999. And so I looked up these number sequences, and they were telling me specific messages that were, you know, pertaining to the events and situations that were going on in my life at the time. And I was blown. It was, and I was absolutely blown away. And, you know, this was the beginning of, I guess, my psychic skills opening up again and my intuitive things from childhood really opening up. So I started to get a lot of intuitive things through my dreams, and numbers were one of them.
How many
and
numbers
so,
would you see in your head when you were dreaming? How many?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it was every night, and you would see, you know, things on doors, you know, numbers on doors or license plates or, you know, just crazy dream scenarios, but they would always have numbers on them.
Really?
And, you know, I would dream of, yeah, it was bizarre, really bizarre. But all of them meant something, and they were very specific. And then after that book, I started to dive into numerology because that explained it even further. And so,
have you ever dreamt a lottery number, Michelle?
No, I haven't, and yeah, I really don't think you can, you know, it's, I think you're meant to know certain things, but, you know, you can't be specific, if you know what I mean. It's kind of,
if you try harder,
they'll give you what you need to know, but they're not going to, you know, help you out to win the lottery kind of thing, right?
Oh, that's a shame. That would be so
I wish, but.
I know. So give me an idea of like, what a sequence of numbers means, you know, if I throw out numbers to you, does it mean anything or no?
Well, I mean, certain numbers have certain energetic vibrations, so that's really what the numbers are doing. They're representing what the energy means, because if you, you know, have looked into anything New Age, they talk about everything being energy, including, you know, your house, any object that you have. It's all energy-based, right?
Have any sports stars ever chosen their numbers for their uniforms based on numerology that you know of?
I don't know. I've never researched that. But, you know, there's a lot of people that pick, you know, random numbers or so they think, and they're not random at all. They actually mean something. In particular, house addresses. A lot of people live at certain houses, and you know, they just pick it because they like the house. But, you know, in analyzing the number of the house, it really shows, you know, what's going on in the house, what types of relationships are going on in the house. And, you know, it's almost like they choose the house because it facilitates what's going on in their life.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Does your house number say anything about you?
My house number actually is my number, which is the 3, and it's very, 3 is very light, sunny, happy-go-lucky, bright, social, humorous, all of those things. So it really keeps, you know, things light here, but it's also a very procrastinating house because to get anything done on a deadline here is like pulling teeth because all I want to do is kick up my feet and relax, which is what the 3 energy is all about, right? I'd be curious to know.
I wanted to say something very interesting about an address. Earlier in the conversation we were having, I was saying that it was very absurd and sort of spiritual that my mother, who is now ill, should have, for the first time in all her years on this planet, not quite a year ago, moved into a apartment in the same place I am, on the same floor, that finally came available when, you know, she was well, and now she's not, and it's perfect for me to help her. So that was very, you know, strange. But what's even stranger was the actual number of the apartment was her birthday and the first letter initial of her name.
Wow, isn't that neat?
So I thought it was almost like, we were laughing because I said, "Boy, this is made for you. It's not. It must be a sign." And I thought that was really crazy, right?
I bet it was a sign. Absolutely. What is your address, Debbie? Just out of curiosity.
I can't tell you. Then people will be coming over wanting to hang out with me.
Oh
Michelle,
no, just the number though. Do you, just
oh,
just
I
the
can't
number.
Say that either. I can't.
Oh, you
say
can't.
That
oh, darn.
I'll tell you, there's a seven in it. I'll tell you, there's.
Oh,
a
is there
seven
a seven in it? Yes. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
In all
fact,
right. Well, maybe we'll do that off air sometime then, for sure.
I'll
have
tell
to
you
analyze
off air.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm
going to
do? Knowing that seven is now my energy force number, I am going to someday go play that at roulette and see if it makes a difference. If I ever go to a casino again, I'm playing seven. I'll call you and let you know.
There you go. Yes. Well, seven seems to follow you then, for sure. So it's your lucky number.
It's my lucky number. If you say so, I'm believing you. You're the numerologist. Boy, oh boy. Home, you have children, and how do you make a living doing numerology? Tell me.
Well, I do readings. I do them online. I do them on the phone. I do them in person.
Okay.
I also do a lot of workshops. I teach intuitive empowerment, spiritual empowerment, and also the numerology aspect. I travel a lot to do workshops and such and speak, and I just love it. I love, you know, it's like an adrenaline rush to get in front of people and just, I become, it's almost like something clicks in me and I become this different person because I just love to share my knowledge and, you know, what I'm enthusiastic about. I just love it.
You know, I was thinking about what you said about being intuitive and how it all ties together in numerology. I've always been intuitive. My grandmother
yes.
was a little bit psychic, I guess my mother told me. My daughter seems to think she has a high level of intuitive ability. And is the word intuitive and the word psychic, do you consider them one and the same as well as what you do with numbers?
Yes. Well, I mean, intuitive is kind of a nice word. I mean, psychic is almost like a dirty word in, you know, as far as psychics are concerned, because we think of psychics as someone who wears the turban or, you know, with the crystal ball and all that. You know, it's kind of a negative image associated with the word psychic. So a lot of people, myself included, like to use the word intuitive because it's almost a refreshing name versus the psychic
yeah.
word, right?
Yeah, it is refreshing. So are people born with intuition on the average, or do most people have intuition and some people just develop it further, or do people are people given a gift of intuition that we would perceive as being psychic?
No, everyone has intuition. Everyone has the ability to do what I do or to do what any psychic or intuitive does. I mean, we all have that gift. It just is a matter of, you know, whether we want to listen to it or not. Really, it boils down to that. It's all about, you know, that still small voice within is always speaking. It's just some people are more inclined to listen or... I guess it's just a want. If you want to do it, you can do it. And, you know, I believe that about anything. If you want to do it, you can do it, right? And
yes.
intuition or being an intuitive is no different. I mean, anybody can do this. And, you know, if your daughter's saying that she's very intuitive, I believe her. Absolutely.
Yes. Now, as people go to make decisions, like myself, we always have that little voice inside that you either listen to or you don't listen to. And I once heard the line and the phrase, with respect to a gut instinct, if it's not 100% yes, it's a no. What is your reaction to that?
Well, the way that I use my intuition for myself, because when I do a reading for someone else, it's, you know, there's no doubting in there. It's just I know what I know, and, you know, there's no attachment to the outcome, so it's fine when I'm reading for someone else. But when it's myself, you know, there's the doubt and the whole is it or isn't it accurate and all of that. And the thing that I like to use is I try on my intuition. You know, if I have a scenario that I'm on the fence about, but my gut says yes, but my head says no, I'll put myself in the situation and feel it and feel what does it feel like to take that job or what does it feel like to do that. And 9 times out of 10, you'll know your answer by doing that, because if you feel a sense of relief from not doing it, then you know you shouldn't be doing it. Right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What about, you know, we've all been in places, you know, in terms of spiritual messages, many people will tell you they've, you know, sat with a neurologist, sat with a psychic, sat with a psychic medium. They'll go to their church and they feel, or they'll get messages in their sleep or whatever. You know, there's a whole long list of how people respect or talk about their spiritual moments. having had many moments with psychic-minded people, when I sit across from them, because I'm always open-minded, I was, you know, to the universe, I always really can't believe some of the things that they are able to say, having never met me before. Where did those things come from, having been on the other side of this?
Well, when I, you know, when I do a reading, it's I guess you're tapping into their energy field, or you're just connecting with their energy, because like I say, everything is energy. And so when I do my little ritual to tune in, like I like to call it, it's almost like you're tapping into their field, and you can read their energy and what's going on. And it's like when I do the reading, it's like I'm stepping into them. It's like I can see their memories and things that are going on. It's like on my mind screen, and I can see, you know, what's going on. It's like playing a memory.
Really? See, then when you say anybody can do this, I don't think that's the case. My personal feeling is I don't think so. I don't think anybody could develop that ability without having some extra gift to do it innately and being born that way.
Well, I have to disagree with you. I have to totally disagree with you, because I've seen time and time again people, you know, doubting that they have this ability, and, you know, I honestly can tell you that we all have this ability, and without a doubt, I believe that. I mean, we are spiritual beings in a physical body, so how can we not be, you know, able to connect?
Well, strange. Let me tell you something weird that happened to me. It's funny. It's coming to mind now as I'm listening to you. You never know where a conversation's going on a tangent, right? I'll be zooming around my house and getting ready to leave. Say I'm going to New York City, and I live about a half hour out of New York City, so I'm leaving for the day, and I have a lot of meetings, and I'll come across an object that has no relevance at all to what I'm going out there to do or business or whatever, and I find myself stopping at it, and then I'll go back to it, and I keep having to, I'm like, keep wondering why I keep picking it up or getting it, and I've come to the conclusion, and this happened many times, that if I didn't take it with me later on, I needed it, and it's like uncanny. If I, you know, I something as stupid as, I don't know, a scissor, okay? Why am I holding a scissor? Why am I holding a scissor? And then, like, 4 hours later, I'll be like, oh, Debbie, does anybody have a scissor? I need to cut this off. I'm like, I should have taken the scissor. I knew I needed the scissor. So when it happens to me now, I find, even if it's something as stupid as a safety pin, I'm holding it, I keep going back to it. I go, well, I must need it later for something. I'll put it in my pocketbook, and sure enough, within the next, I don't know, 5 hours, 6 hours, some reason I needed that safety pin, and I have it. It's, what do you call that?
That's called intuition. I mean, that's what I'm talking about here. Well, Debbie, you know what? I have to wrap this up because we have 7 minutes left, and I want to introduce the next guest or just give a little blurb on it. So I'd like to thank you for joining me on air. It was
okay.
A pleasure, as I knew it
Your
would
sweetheart.
Be.
Your
well, thank
sweetheart.
You. Likewise. So thanks again, and we'll definitely be in touch. Definitely. We'll keep this.
And tell all your friends, all your girlfriends who are either over 40, feeling 20, who want to find the humor in falling apart, or who are younger and want to see what's coming and have all the laughs we're having, to go to stillupbabe.com. We'd love to have
Absolutely,
you.
Yes.
Share the humor with us.
That's right. Check it out, guys. Check it out.
Okay.
So thank you, Debbie. Have a great evening.
All right, sweetie. Thank you very much for having me. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, guys, next week's show, I only have 6 minutes left, so I'm going to rattle this off fairly quickly. Next week's guest is Chris Amadeo. Now, Chris has an incredible story. He is, you know, he has a lot of synchronistic events associated with his situation. 2 years ago, Chris attended an auction in support of a fundraiser for a friend's child who was dying of an inoperable brain tumor. Now, the child's father, a guitar teacher, had one of his guitars up for auction, and the guitar called to Chris. So he put a bid on it, and he had no idea how to play this guitar. But fast forward 2 years later, and a whole bunch of synchronistic events in between, and Chris has a record deal, an album out called Homo Luminous, and let me tell you, this guy is fantastic. He is an incredible artist. His music is all about the shift in consciousness that we're going through now, so it's really fitting for the show, and I really, you know, encourage you to listen to his music, and we'll definitely have him on the show next week to talk about all of that and all of his synchronistic journey. His website, if you want to have a listen to his music before the next show, is homo/luminous.com, and you'll hear all of his music there, and it's fantastic lyrics, beautiful, absolutely beautiful. So thank you all for joining us, and we'll catch you next week for another great hour of Surviving the Shift. Good night, everyone.